Hey everyone, it's Brandon, producer of the Rheology Podcast. Today is part two of the interview with Scott Johnson. In this episode, Scott shares the second stage of the process of discovering the God partnership, the death of a dream, where everything seems to go off the rails and not according to plan, where questions like, where is God when it hurts, come into play. Welcome back. This is part two.
Hey guys, welcome back. This is part two of our conversation with Scott. The first episode was about the birth of the dream, and now we're going to get into the death of the dream. So Scott, start us off. What does it mean by, the death of the dream? The dream is dying.
Yeah, it's death. It's real death.
Is it painful? Is it quick? Are there doctors surrounding you? Or are you by yourself? You've got your family and loved ones around
death
you.
Deathbed or like death in the battlefield.
Yeah.
I love this.
I think it was a quick death.
Okay.
But good for you. So like I just pulled up the five stages of grief because honestly it's exactly that. So like the first stage of grief is denial. So like, was it long lasting? Did you have people around your deathbed? It was already dead. I just didn't know it was dead. And I was in denial, thinking that as we ended the last time, like trying to get back on track. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to like resurrect a dead being at this point.
Dragging a corpse.
Yes. Yeah. I saw a, this is a little weird, but I saw a picture, and they used to do this back in like the 19th century. Early 19th century, when cameras were starting taking photos of people, mm-hmm. like that. They were expensive to do. You don't have a lot of pictures of people because people didn't get pictures taken. So, but when they did, one of the things that they would spend money to get a picture taken for is if a loved one died, they would take a post-mortem family picture.
Whoa.
So,
with the dead body?
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
He's like propped up?
Yes. Eyes open, looking as if like they're alive. You can still see, and you can see the strings and stuff they would use to prop these dead people up. Yeah. So
that's terrifying.
It's super, imagine, super
imagine
weird.
Like an 8-year-old watching their granddad die. Wait a minute.
What we'll do is in the edit, we'll put up a picture of what one looks like. This is, you
that's
can be totally freaked
crazy.
Out. So that's like, now I've got a picture to remember my sweet so-and-so who died.
Man, life was just,
it's weird.
Valued in a different,
in a different way.
Barely valued.
Yeah. So it's almost like that, right? I'm trying to it's like Weekend at Bernie's kind of mentality. It's like, it's still alive. Yeah, it's still alive. I'm propping it up.
That's sad. It's sad at that point.
It's sad. It's sad at that point because the reality is it is dead. It is not alive. And I'm trying to figure out how to keep it alive when it's actually dead.
So where does your wife, Robin, play into all this? Was she aware of what was going on or just?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Did she know that things were dying or were already dead?
So
it's easy for her to accept. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think she knew either. Okay. I think one of her dreams is about to die as well, because she was, when we started having kids, she wanted to be a stay at home mom for as long as she could. So she quit her job. So when we were in Kentucky, she worked for the Department of Social Services and full time. That's what she went to school for to do and whatever. So, and then when we moved to Georgia and we had Anna Grace, she's like, I'm gonna stay home. Mm-hmm. So she was a stay at home mom from, Georgia back to Indiana and then to Charlotte.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And so when all my life went south, and even though I'm working over at this other church part-time, I mean, I'm not working full-time. So she then goes back to work full-time. Mm. And
so it's really not just your dream.
Nope.
It's his family dream.
Yeah. We're all feeling
that's heavier.
It.
Yeah.
And she, obviously she knew all of the stuff that was going on with the new church. And, that's how we live life, is that we share just about everything together. Yeah. And so she knew. I was a round peg trying to fit into mm-hmm. a a triangle hole kind of a deal. And just, it wasn't good. Wasn't right. We didn't know what to do, but we just really wanted to buy our time for that whole year. And then when it actually happened was when, like, okay, now that's over with. Okay, cool. And there is a little, there is a sense, a small sense of like relief because I'm not doing that anymore. But it's just, again, it's just like, okay, now what do we got to do to get, I'll tell you what, I'll go back to work and then give you some time. You go work for them, do that for a year. You're covering the mortgage. I'll cover other stuff and whatever, but not realizing that that would last for, you know, that, so that was in 2005. And then I worked all 2006 at that church part-time. And then in 2007, I started Brown Cow for the first time.
Okay.
This is, which is my graphic design business, small business. So, but I mean, that's like slow moving. So financially, we kind of struggled a little bit here and there. And I actually started to have those George Mueller experiences on some very small little levels, like literally being like, hey, we're short $150 on, you know, paying the house payment. What are we going to do? I have no idea. And go out to the mailbox and get a check for $150. Wow. No lie. And then that didn't happen a lot, but it did happen. And I never had that happen in my life before. Never. So like looking back at it, I'm looking at it going like, God is like, he's getting ready to birth a new thing
so
in me.
In all of this, did you feel like, where was God's hand in all of this? Did you feel like he killed the dream, or the dream was killed by somebody else or something else, and now he's like coming back into your life? What was his involvement?
Yeah, I don't think that God said, we're going to kill this dream so that I can build a new dream for you. I think what God did, because honestly, like me coming to Charlotte had nothing to do with God. It was me. So my situation was, and the result was, it's a product of my decision making.
Yeah.
Or lack of decision making, right, or poor decision making. So, God, I had no doubt that God, he was not involved in, like, you know, killing anything or whatever. Okay. But he was definitely like, hey, now if I've got your attention, I'm kind of ready to kind of show you what I want to do here.
So,
if you're willing to
do
that.
So once the church thing didn't work out and you guys had to make a decision, did you start to orientate yourself back to him?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. Okay. With an asterisk, right? Because again, it's like, well, it's going to be church somehow.
Yeah, right.
So God, you know, tell me what you want to do next. Through church.
So which is the next?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So again, just serious denial. And then when, you know, so then when I start Brown Cow and, I mean, this is a crazy long process of the five stages of grief. So like if it took, you know, gosh, 34, 35 years for me, you know, building my own birth of a dream, you know, it's going to take several years for the death of the dream before any kind of resurrection happens. I mean, I think of like, you know, I think of like guys like David who were, you know, anointed king by Samuel when he was a kid. It took 15 years for him to actually ascend the throne, but he was ordained, but he had to go through a whole lot the stuff. So, so in that situation, his birth of a dream was, hey, I'm going to go out here and do something for God. I'm going to kill Goliath.
Right.
Cool. That's it. It's awesome. And then he gets ordained and, oh, this is my identity. This is who I am. And then all of a sudden, the king, you know, Saul loses his mind and he chases David, and David has to go. And this is where the idea of wilderness comes into. David then has to literally go into the actual desert,
right?
The Judean wilderness, and hide, you know, and in fear of his life, and really try to escape for years. He has to do this. So I mean, just like Joseph, and also I'll say I'm not a David and I'm not a Joseph, but this is how, these are just examples of how God is willing to work if we're allowing to. Because David could have really just said, No. I was king. I was ordained king, and I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah.
Because this is a God thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm going to go and do this. Mm-hmm. And we're going to raise up a rebellion, and we're going to fight up against Saul. We're going to defeat Saul. And yeah, we got you. So he could have done things that way. But if he would have done things that way, he would have missed out on a whole stage of life of building a character and learning how God wants to do things and really understanding that all of this is God's stuff. We just get to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Joseph's the same way, as his dreams as a kid, you know, he's going to basically kind of rule over his family and whatever. And what happens, I mean, he's got this dream, he's living this dream. This is going to be awesome. This is who I am. This is God ordained. And he gets thrown into a pit and he gets sold into slavery. And he's in that for 15 years. Yeah. Again, another 15-year deal. So my thing is not going to be like, you know, the death of a dream lasts for a year.
Mm-hmm.
No, it lasts for a long time. So it started in 05. And honestly, up until just like maybe a year ago,
right?
I mean, we're talking, you know, what, 16, 17
yeah,
years,
yeah, yeah.
18 mm-hmm. years. So for me, it was I'm in denial, and I'm still trying to like figure out how to just get back on track. And I'm networking, and I'm doing all that kind of stuff. And so
you're trying to get a church job again,
doing Brown Cow. I have a partner in Brown Cow. That lasted for about a year and a half, and then it went south, and then, we split, and then I continued to do some of that kind of work. And then one of my, clients, who had started a church down on this side of town, he was asking me to, I did all of his design stuff and whatnot. So he's asking me, hey, would you be interested in coming to our meetings and like helping like creatively, like, you know, consult us on some stuff. Yeah, I'd love that. It'd be great. So like he paid me to do that, which was great. I love doing that, you know, giving my opinion and taking the money. See ya.
Yeah.
That was great. But, you know, so I'm doing like a little hodgepodge kind of stuff and never really like getting a good firm footing of going like, oh, so this is where we're going.
Yeah.
Never. Right. When something would seem like this is, this is becoming clear. This is becoming clear. Now something happened and just kind of destroyed that. So, the recession hit in like 2009. So Brown Cow like got nailed my business. And so we're like, now what? And that's when some of the financial struggles we were having and stuff, and some of those George Mueller moments. And then, so my friend guy that I'm helping with them in 2010 says, hey, we want to hire you to come. We just need you to come on staff. Mm. Would you guys be willing to move down here and stuff? And, you know, we were like, you know, you guys know where we lived. We had Anna Grace was getting ready to go into middle school. You all know the middle schools, public middle schools up there.
Mm-hmm.
Negatory, good buddy. so it seemingly looked like this is coming at the right time.
Mm.
And honestly, I was just going to go with it, even though I'm like, and do what? What am I going to do? I already knew that they were not really established. Again, they were just another church plant that was not going to make disciples or really like focus on making disciples.
Okay.
So right off the bat, I'm like, why am I doing this? But it was more than anything, I just felt like God was just saying, I am going to provide for you guys. I'm going to provide not just money, but a great little small school system your kids will grow up in, they'll graduate from. A good little area. And you know, I need to take you through something in order to really understand how dead this dream of yours is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm going to use ministry to do that.
Amazing.
Ironically.
Mm. Yeah.
So I started in spring of 2010, and very quickly I realized there was some, you know, again, just staff dysfunction. with primarily with the main leader.
I think I actually played.
You did
one Sunday
with there. Him. That was it. Yeah. That was it. Yeah, when you brought the djembe and stuff, we just did a little acoustic set. That was that church. Yeah, okay. But that was actually before I moved.
It was Huntersville.
No, this is down here. Uh huh.
But you're living.
But I was living in university. Yeah, because I think I swung by and picked you up.
Well, you very well could have done that.
I did. I swung by and picked you up because you were a student at
UNC. I was probably still asleep when you picked me up too. That's why I don't remember it.
Yeah, maybe. And then we drove down, and because they asked if I could fill in, and I said sure.
Yeah.
So I think I'd asked maybe Justin or someone to say like, who can help me?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. But that was it. That was the church. But that was before, probably maybe the fall, right before 09.
Okay.
When did you graduate?
11.
Okay. So
anyway.
Yeah. So I just realized that this has got some problems. And I think through that, like one of the things that definitely God was trying to teach me, because all of this is like a learning, right? This is all learning. I just want to go through some of this too. So anger is one. I didn't do these steps in order. Anger happened to me in 2021. I've told you guys about that.
Yeah.
I'll talk about bargaining. Right. Where it's like, God, if you'll just do this, I'll serve you the rest of my life.
Oh.
Right.
Is that God, one of the stages of grief? Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. If you'll just, work things out for me, I'll do whatever you want me to do. It's a bargaining kind of thing. Just get me out of this.
Yeah.
Get me out of this because it is painful. It's super painful. There's no control. Think about like if one of your parents died, you have no control anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a reality.
Yeah.
And so these are the stages of after the fact, denial that like, this can't be true. My gosh. Bargaining is one. Depression, acceptance is the last one. Anger, depression, acceptance. But so for me at this point, I almost felt like, okay, this was the bargaining thing. Mm. Like if you'll help me out, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And I felt like going to this new church was God saying, okay, I'll take you up on that bargain. We'll shake hands. Good. It's a good deal. It's a good deal. Shake hands. And now that's my reality. But for me, since I was all of a sudden thrust into a situation where there was a real problem in the staff and primarily with the leader, I was all of a sudden the middleman now. And because I never really experienced those problems with him one-on-one, he really respected my opinion, a lot of things, wanted to know my opinion. I mean, he really did respect me a lot. And I appreciate that a lot. But with everybody else, he micromanaged. There was always issues. He had some issues with people that would leave the church, and he would want to like go knock on their door and go, why aren't you coming to church?
Of course.
And people were like, ugh. So I started hearing all these things of meetings that took place. And so very quickly I realized that like in my life, I mentioned last episode, like the 3-year deal. Mm-hmm. 3 years. Oh, things are not going so great here. They're going great, but there's some elements of it that I just don't want to deal with anymore. I'm going to move on. That's the easy. Mm-hmm. That's the easy fix to stay away from this 3-step mm-hmm. process, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That we can continue to live in our own dream. We just say, nah, I'm done. I'll go on. But here, I really felt like God was like, no, you're not getting away. Mm. You're not going to leave. You're not going to. It's the response of danger, that we have in our lives of either, flee or fight, mm-hmm. and those responses. And so for me, I felt God was like going, you're going to stick in this. It's not going to be fun, but you're going to fight. And for me and the worship pastor, we really felt like God was basically saying, I want you to learn truth and love, truth and love, truth and love. You're, There's no emotions attached to it. You're not angry. You're not ticked off. You're not getting into a verbal fight. You're just going to speak the truth in love. That's just the way it's going to be. And it's confrontation, and no one likes confrontation. I don't like confrontation. Obviously, I think my initial reaction is to just flee. I'll go get another ministry, you know, or if someone calls, I'm done with this, I'll go with you guys. So that lasted for a year and a half. And then in the fall of 2011, the senior minister came to my house and said, "Hey, I just want to let you know I'm resigning tomorrow in church."
Wow. Tomorrow.
Yeah. And I won't be back. And I'm like, okay. And the real problem that really made me mad, because we were using a third party to help us work through this, some of this stuff, which to me was the healthy, right thing to do.
Yeah.
And he just.
But he literally said, "Tomorrow's my last day."
That's it. Yeah.
And you were like second in command, like an associate pastor, and.
No, you were just like
kind of. Okay. Yeah, kind of. Okay. The other staff. First of all, our children's worship, our children's pastor had left in the summer because she's like, "I just can't do this anymore."
This is ridiculous. Yeah.
We had another worship pastor before when I was doing the consulting. He was there. It was just the two of them that helped start. They started the church together. He left before I came on because he was like, "I can't do this anymore." So we have a new worship pastor. Is my buddy Brian. So he and I were kind of like shoulder to shoulder into this thing. We're gonna try to, you know, do this thing. So our children's pastor left in the summer, and then we had a new part time. But she was so fresh, she didn't really know what was going on. So really, at that point, you know, it's just, you know, our worship pastor had resigned, and he was getting ready to leave when the lead guy left. And so really, it was just me.
Wow.
And then a part time. Children's pastor. And she's like, "Now what, Scott?" And I'm like, "I don't know." But when
you
he
stay here, I'm gonna go.
Yeah. I'll be right back.
Yeah. So that didn't take long for me to go. I need to get out of here. So I think maybe a month later I resigned. Okay. So
how big was the church?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 120 people maybe.
Okay, so sizable.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. But I think there were some, it was starting to like dwindle, and then we had to have some like hard conversations. Mm-hmm. And that's what really started blowing things up, because the lead pastor couldn't deal with it. Anywho, so that's 2011 and 2012. I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life. My friend Darren says, "Hey, we got a warehouse. We can do some part-time stuff here." I was helping do stuff in a warehouse and driving a forklift and having out of body moments like every day. I remember recording myself going like, you know, video diary number 14, I'm driving a forklift. Yeah. What in the world? So this is when the dream, its death starts to become very real.
Acceptance. Yeah.
There is no more denial. There is some bargaining still going on. "God, get me out of here. Mm-hmm. Get me out of here. I'll do whatever you want me to do." There isn't maybe as much anger at this point, and there's not depression. I feel like those two things kind of go pretty much hand in hand. So I'm not like really for sure that this is completely dead yet, but it only takes like a couple of months to me go like, "This is, oh my gosh, this is my life now." Mm-hmm. I don't recognize myself. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So Robin gets a full-time job because she had a full-time job, and we moved down here and she got a part-time job. Well, then she goes back to full-time. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that, delivering pizzas for Domino's at night, and literally just like in shock, in serious, serious, serious shock. And
what are your conversations weird. Like with God during this period?
Definitely. I mean, accelerated, show me what I'm supposed to do. It's definitely the bargaining still. If you kind of look at it, it's technically still bargaining. Show me what you want me to do. Show me what you want me to do.
Because surely this is not the place.
This is not it. This is not it.
Did you ever feel like you wanted to walk away from God ever?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there like,
I'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Because, but absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So I think at that point is when, since I'm working with Darren, he'd be like, hey, you know, let's go grab some lunch. And we were friends before that, because we met through that church. Okay. But we really, our friendship really started to like grow roots during the after church stuff. Mm-hmm. Because now I can't put that hat on.
I was going to say, that's the first time you didn't have a title of Christian.
No title.
You actually had to like live it out outside of your work identity.
Yeah. Yeah. The first real time. Mm-hmm. I kind of did it I did it, you know, up in Charlotte too, but yeah, this is like, it's like dead. There's mm-hmm. no, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody else is moving on to other churches and they're getting calls by people and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I got no calls.
Right. Mm.
You're driving a forklift.
I'm driving a forklift and I'm applying to stuff and getting nothing. Absolutely zero. So
to churches.
Uh huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And, but that lasted maybe a year and I stopped doing that. So Darren and I so this is when I started. So we talk about the whole stirring stuff. Mm-hmm. This is when the stirring really went into full gear for me, because then I just started, I'm looking at what we did in youth ministry and I'm looking at the other experiences that I've had since then. And I just start, you know, really just going, man, why is like, mm-hmm. why was youth ministry mm-hmm. like fruitful mm-hmm. and this other stuff just so jacked? Why was it so jacked? And so that's when I really started just, you know, the stirring process. And as we've talked about so many times, I really started wondering, you know, it's like Derek, my buddy Derek saying to me, you know, why do you say you go to heaven? My brain kicked in at this moment in my life of like thinking, you know, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. What is church? Why do we have a church? It doesn't look very effective to me. Youth ministry is super effective. Yeah. Everything else I've been a part of is junk. I'm not saying all of them are junk. Some of them are doing okay. But I got very curious, and our conversations Darren and I used to have would be all centered around that. And probably more than anything, you know, life, to the name of this little series, it's just like, what is a Christian? Mm-hmm. What does Christianity look like? Is it ministry? Mm-hmm. Is that the title I wear? Is that my identity? And all these kinds of things, then I started really sorting through and journaling all this stuff. And
was it hard to do that? Because in my head, but you said there was no bitterness or anger towards God or the circumstances?
Not at this point, no.
Okay. Still not. Okay.
No, I really, honestly, I felt like, I really did feel like God was trying to show me something new.
Okay.
And so I didn't really blame God for any of this stuff. Because like going to Crosspoint, I kind of knew a little bit what I was going to. Like, that's why I said, I was like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm, it doesn't really line up with me, but okay. And I met some great people and that was awesome and stuff. But so I still didn't see any of this as God's fault necessarily. Right. And I didn't go, God, you know, you're cruel, or why God would you do this to me? I didn't question that at that point. Cause I'm, you know, we're having lunches and we're talking and it's almost like, you know, energizing, because we're like, almost like we're discovering things for the first time, small little bits, you know, like a little breadcrumb trail leading to something bigger and bigger and bigger. And, so this is when I'm journaling and stuff like that. And then in 2013, I start Brown Cow up again. And you know, we kind of struggle still financially here and there, until 14, when it's like, okay, now we're kind of back. And like 15, 16, 17, and 18 and even 19 or decent years. But I mean, so we're talking like, you know, there's 6 years down the road here of meeting and talking with Darren and just living life and trying to like come to grips with this thing is dead, you know, sorting through the denial process, going, okay, I can't deny it anymore, because guess what? I'm still not in ministry.
Right.
Yeah.
Every year.
Yeah.
Maybe next year. Nope. Maybe the next year. No, maybe in 14. No, maybe in 15. No, maybe in 16. No. So like, it's, you know, you'd have to be like, I mean, I guess in serious denial, if you're going 5 or 6 years still yeah. hoping, well, maybe next year. So at that point, I finally come to the point where like, this is dead. What Matt McGee told me years ago, this is the death of the dream. It mm-hmm. is dead. But I also already know that there's a birth of a dream. Mm. So I'm ready to get on with the birth of the dream. Let's do that now, God.
So you were looking next? For that.
Oh, yeah.
You're already like optimistic and like,
oh, yeah.
this isn't a temporary. This yeah. isn't my whole life.
Okay. No. And so,
but I can see you trying to, or thinking like, I know this one dream has died, but maybe I already know what the new dream is.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. kind of pigeonholing yourself into really just thinking, but it's still my first one. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like the paradigm hasn't fully been broken.
Right.
I think at this point, probably around like 15 or something like that, 16, I'm at the point where the paradigm is dead.
So the new dream could have been anything in your head.
It could have been
wide open.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of open. Because at this point after I'm journaling, I'm starting to podcast, you know, okay. in 17, okay, I think. Right. I'm starting a podcast.
That was the first podcast.
Mm-hmm. I think wow. it was 17, late 17.
Okay.
Before you wrote the book?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah. The podcast came first. Because, well, the podcast was nothing but just my journal. Okay. And I have a handful right. of my friends reading the journal, and they're all like, this could be a podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you think so? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And this is obviously before, you
podcasts
know.
Podcasts were a thing.
Well, before, you know, faith deconstruction was a thing.
Oh, right.
So, okay. like. This is when Darren and I are literally just like going, does anybody else feel this way? Mm-hmm. Is anybody else going through this? Mm-hmm. I mean, not does anybody else go through grief? Of course they do.
Right.
But is anybody going through this learning stage? Like, no, I'm going to show you that old dream that you lived in, which happened to live in the realm of church. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just completely destroy that so that you can see that, you know, the way I work is exponential. There isn't a, you know, as you said, there isn't that like default thing that a Christian goes into ministry.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah. there isn't a prepackaged kind of deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you by getting rid of all that. I'm going to teach you what that actually was mm-hmm. and versus what you've been reading in Acts
wow.
and the actual ecclesia. Is that probably at this point, I don't think I really started writing about the ecclesia until maybe like 14.
Okay.
2014, because that's when I think towards the end of 13 is when I really, you know, really, really started researching big time. But so then the podcast happened and then the book happened. So here's where the birth of the dream in my mind, I think this is where the birth, because I'm waiting for it. I know it's this is part of the process. It's a 3-step process. I did one step. I'm in step two. When's step three going to happen? You know, when's the birth of the dream? God's dream. And still not having any clue what that meant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Still like thinking about dreams in my limited like understanding. Mm. And not fully giving it, you know, at this point. But I was definitely waiting for when that was. So when the podcast started happening and then writing the book and then releasing the book, meeting you guys, us getting together, other people getting together. So now we're talking like 21, 22, well, 21 for sure. In 21 and all the time here, especially in 2020, I have another like death happening. And so the death that happened in 20, since 2020 was the pandemic, mm-hmm. And I have a small little business, you can pretty much figure what happened. So this mm-hmm. is like, similar to what happened obviously in the recession in 2009, but obviously we all know way worse,
yeah.
way worse. I mean, I made, like, I think I made something like $6,000 that year.
Whoa,
and that was all before April. So like it's mainly first quarter and a little bit of the second quarter.
Wow.
That's it.
Yeah.
And, I had months where I could not pay rent. Like I'd get like 2 months behind, almost 3.
Wow.
And trying to get the, you know, the government was doing unemployment, like
PPP
like,
loans.
Yeah. Well, I tried to do PPP loans and I couldn't get that, but they did the pandemic unemployment thing. And I applied for that in April, and I went through the a crazy ordeal trying to get this stupid thing done. People are already getting their money and stuff like that. And I finally had to reach out to the governor of South Carolina and say, like, this is insane. Wow. I've called the department like five different times. They keep telling me to do this. I'm doing all this stuff. I need help. And so, man, our governor, he went to town. His staff did. And I mean, within like 2 days, I had the unemployment agency calling me. They're like, we got a call from the government. Wow. Governor, we want to help you figure this out. Good. And within like a week, I got like, $6,000.
Wow. Interesting.
So that helped out. But another death was Brown Cow. And it's not a full-time job anymore. Would never be another full-time job ever again. Mm. And so, financially, the stuff that we went through in 2020 was just awful. I hated every minute of it. And, again, this is when the anger starts to really, this is when it starts to kind of start to boil.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I thought we were kind of on a track to get to the new dream.
It's time, right?
The resurrection is happening, right? No, another just death.
More deaths.
Yeah, death.
You thought it was dying, but he's killing it now.
We're killing all kinds of stuff, and there's Brown Cow, it's dead. And so in 2021, so at that point, I need to get a job. I just need to get a job. All this stuff's dead. God's not doing a new thing. It's all dead. It's just dead, 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 dead. And so I need to get a job. I'm going to try to get a job. And so I literally, in a year's period of time, I probably applied to maybe 35 different graphic design jobs in and around Charlotte, and a couple, outside of Charlotte. Nothing from those. Zero. I had four different career coach people that I was talking to. They were all giving me the same stuff, all the same advice. You need to do this. You need that. You need a network. You need to get on Indeed and really build up your Indeed thing. I built my Indeed profile up and networked on Indeed for 4 months straight, like posting stuff on Indeed like twice a day, every day. Nothing. Got me nowhere. I had a friend who said, hey, I think I got a job for you. Dude, sweet, awesome, cool. Sounds like a really cool thing. And that went through the summer of 2021, a whole summer of having meetings and interview kind of things. And at the end of it, it didn't go anywhere. And that's when my anger just exploded. Because at that point I was just like, you just get your kicks, God, out of seeing people, rile around on the ground in agony.
Suffering.
You really enjoy that, don't you? What kind of sick, twisted God would do that? And I don't want any part of it. So in 2021 is when the anger just exploded to the point where, and for the first time in my life, I really thought God and I were going to get a divorce.
Wow.
I thought it was over. And it was very rough. And then depression, that's why I feel like the anger, depression both kind of come, they did for me anyway. They come hand in hand. And the thing is, man, I am not, I was always an upbeat, optimistic dreamer kind of guy. I never got, super stressed out in life. I never got burned out. I never got burned out in ministry ever. I was always, an energy guy. I was always an idea guy. I was super, super optimistic. And all of a sudden I became Eeyore. And now at that point in 2021, I was extremely angry and incredibly depressed. And I was not to the point where I wanted to hurt myself or anything like that. It wasn't that. But I just was ready just to give up on God, because I'm like, it just felt cruel. It felt really cruel. thank God that there's a part of my brain that is at least smart enough to go, and maybe even wise enough to say, you know what? You got problems, but there are other problems in this world that are worse off than yours. There's a saying I used to say when we were in Charlotte going through what we were going through. People would always say, like, hey, man, how you doing? How you doing? And I'd always say, like, well, the stuff that matters is great. The stuff that doesn't matter sucks. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's perspective. Okay. You know, and so I knew that I needed some perspective at least, so I could like talk myself off the ledge. Yeah. And so I'm like, I need to read some perspective. So I was looking at some of these books. I saw that there's a book by some guy that he lost his daughter. He's in ministry, lost his daughter. And he wrote this book. I was like, this is the kind of book I need to read. And I go to buy it and I was like, $25. I was like, nope, I don't have $25. Yeah. I don't know. I got to find a book. And so I saw that Apple was having a sale on like Max Lucado. I used to never read Max Lucado. Robin read Max Lucado back in the day. So I'm like, so he had a two book combo, and one of the books was called In the Eye of the Storm. And they were 99 cents for two. I'm like, now we're talking. Yeah, Eye of the Storm. I'm like, I'm in the eye of the storm. Maybe this is applicable. I don't know.
For
maybe
99 cents. You 99 can make cents. It
out. Why not? Why not? And I have only read just a little bit of Max Lucado, and I know he's brilliant with words and stuff. And so I started reading this, and it's literally like God is sitting down with me going, wow, let me tell you some things. Hmm. And that like saved my spiritual life.
That's cool.
It saved my marriage. And in that book, he quotes a guy named Philip Yancey, mm-hmm, who's also a famous Christian author, and from one of his books that's called Disappointment with God. And I was like, someone wrote a book called Disappointment with God? Man, you're really gutsy.
Titles, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, how's he not struck dead by lightning by now? So I'm like, I need to read that. And when I read that, like Philip, so like Max Lucado, like comforted me.
Hmm.
He said, come here, get off the ledge. You don't want to do that. Come here. Let's come here. Let me comfort you a little bit. And so that book comforted me, but Philip Yancey's book like educated me.
Hmm.
And like, almost like Derek Willoughby, you know, going, saying the right things for my brain. It's like Philip Yancey did the exact same thing. Okay. It's like, I know how your brain works. Cool. It's like someone being diagnosed. And I did have cancer back in the day. I had skin cancer. And what? So, yeah. You see my scar? I have a scar right there?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah. Okay, I remember now. Yes.
So I had skin cancer in like 2016 or something like that. And then had it taken off my face. Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't remember the story, but go on.
Yeah, it was melanoma. But when I was, I had this brown patch on my skin, and I was like, it's kind of weird. I had people always say, you need to get that checked out. Yeah, whatever. And then the center of it started like getting black. I was like, oh, shoot. So when I first got diagnosed with skin cancer, you know, I didn't go, oh no, why God? That's just not me. That's not me. I'm like, okay, what's it called? Okay. And what stage is it in? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to go home and research the crap out of this thing so that I can educate myself, because I want to know.
Right.
I want to know what I'm facing. And so Philip Yancey educated me. He helped me understand, you know, mainly the process that God goes through when it comes to long suffering,
okay,
AKA the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And so from him, I went on to learn about the wilderness. Specifically, that's when the wilderness really became like a reoccurring theme for me. I kept seeing people talk about the wilderness. I saw listened to podcasts and they mentioned the wilderness. I'd see it in a book. And I'm going, okay, this is, God is trying to get my attention here. I need to go and learn more about the wilderness. And so then I started understanding and I started learning about what the wilderness is, the concept and what it does. And that is, the wilderness is is the death of the dream. Mm-hmm. That is the in between the two worlds. You have a dream over here and you have a dream over here. In order to get from this dream to a better dream and mm-hmm. a way more fulfilling dream, which is God. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the parallel of, like, you know, our lives. We think that we're supposed to be this, and God is like, I have different plans for you. And then in that, there has to be a death. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to die to ourselves. We have to die to the flesh. We have to die to this human dream that is incredibly limited. And in order to get with what God is, mm-hmm. is trying to do on this planet, and those two realms, his realm and our realm coming together.
Do you think it's God brings you into the wilderness, or you find yourself in the wilderness and you have an option to say, okay, either I can look to God to not even get me out of this, uh-huh. but I just need help, or I'm going to try and navigate this myself and continue to rely on my own, like, wisdom?
I think all of the above. I think number one, you definitely find yourself in the wilderness. Something happens in life. I don't care if it's if your spouse, your dad, your mom, whatever, dies. You're going to find yourself in some sort of wilderness yeah. immediately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, your approach can be any of those. Like, what's your next step? Well, my next step is get me the crap out of here as fast as possible. I'm gonna get out of this. I want out of this. And so you'll do something to get out of that wilderness, whatever it is. You lose your job. Well, what's the next thing you're going to go do? Go get another job.
Another job, yeah.
I'm not about to sit in this stuff for a long time. It sucks. I don't like this. And I need money, and I need this, and I need to do that. And it's part of my career, and I need to, boom, I go. Not to saying that get another job is a bad thing or whatever. It's not. But it's just that mentality of, like, this happened. Okay, now I'm going to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
So either I'm getting myself out of this, or I'm going to navigate my way through it,
right.
or I'll deny there's even a existence mm-hmm. of the wilderness and whatever, but, or I'm going to, cause God's in the wilderness, I'm going to allow him to actually, for the first time in my life, I'm going to allow him to be the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
So, cause when I started learning about the wilderness, it just, like, you know, using simple, you know, illustrative, like, terms of like, you know, we use the word wilderness as an illustrative term, right? Because it's the desert and, or it's the dense forest or whatever. The Negev, which is the Judean wilderness, is like uninhabitable. I mean, it doesn't have the like five basics that you need to okay. actually live. It is uninhabitable. You cannot live there. You can't survive. I think we talk about the show Alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and they go to Vancouver Island mm-hmm. or whatever. It's like, think that. Even though and worse.
Yeah, because that's safe.
you can figure it out, but yeah. it's really rough. You know, on Alone, it's really, really mm-hmm. rough. Cause, like, hey man, I'm getting fish. I figured it out. Oh, how many episodes have we seen that?
Yeah.
And the very next episode, the fish aren't coming anymore. Yeah. So it's that kind of mentality where the Negev is a big chunk of area that doesn't get rainfall. On one side of it is incredibly fruitful land. On the other side is incredibly fruitful land. And that's where civilizations thrive. Mm-hmm. And then the wilderness or the desert, there's no people there because people can't survive there. Mm-hmm. People don't live on, well, I don't know. Maybe there are some people who live on Vancouver Island, but I don't know. Maybe they do, but it's pretty remote.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that in an illustrative purposes is that we have the Negev, the desert. It's uninhabitable. You just can't survive there. And the idea is that, you know, the goal isn't to live in the Negev. The goal isn't to live in the wilderness. It's to navigate it. And so, and it's not necessarily the goal isn't to get out as fast as you can.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That would be probably optimal. And I right. would like that because it's foreign and it's difficult and it's hard. But the goal is to survive and navigate.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, to navigate through it. And so for biblical times, a shepherd would take his his goats, his flock, whatever, sheep, goats, whatever it was, into the wilderness. And the sheep or the goats had no clue where they were. They had no idea how to get to where they went, to where they needed to get. They didn't know where to go to get, you know, we talk about the Psalms where like the shepherd, you know, takes me and leads me mm-hmm. by still waters mm-hmm. and leads me into green pastures. Well, there are no green pastures really. There's like small little sprigs of green, mm-hmm. but the shepherd does know where that is. The shepherd knows where water is. And if the animals, the flock, will trust the shepherd, then they will, you know, they will succeed in the goal, so right? Survival and navigation.
Does the shepherd take the animals there on purpose for yeah. them to learn to follow the shepherd?
Well, I don't know if that's it or not, but that is honestly typically where they go to graze and stuff, because there are places in, so it's like a necessary evil kind of a deal,
yeah, okay.
right? It's like, well, we have to go in there because
that's where food is.
Yeah. I'm going to take you in there to graze today. You can't graze on the same land over and over mm-hmm, and over. Nothing right. would grow. So they have to go in to graze, and there's not much, but there is, and there's not much water, but there
is just there.
It's there. It's enough. And so that's what I started learning when I started researching the idea and concept of wilderness and the biblical idea of it. That's where, when you start hearing all these ideas that Jesus teaches about these, you know, these illustrated examples of a shepherd and sheep, then it starts to become very real yeah. mm-hmm. because it's not we see green pastures in the Psalms, and we think of like America pastures,
sure, you know, you got
super green pastures. Yeah. And you got buffalo, or you got cows out there, or you got sheep out there, and they just lightly, man, they got it made in the shade and what, you know, no. The shepherd analogy is only attached to Jesus when it comes to difficulty.
Mm.
And the reality is that every one of us cannot, we will experience difficulty. None of us can escape it.
Mm-hmm.
We can avoid it, and we try to get out of it. But that to me was like the real moment of like getting ready to go through it, trying to go through a divorce, and then being taught and led something and being educated and understanding. I finally started to understand my role. And we've talked about this a lot too. Understanding my role, that Jesus is not calling me to be a leader mm-hmm, per se.
Mm-hmm.
He's calling me to be a follower. And he even says, my sheep will, they'll know me. They'll know my voice. And that alludes to the idea that the only reason why I ever get to know his voice is if I abide in him, if I spend time, if I have, and I enter into that deeper relationship, the love relationship, mm-hmm. and not just religion, as we've said 100 times, that's when it really became real. I already knew that, but I actually experienced that and was living that for the first time in my life.
In the wilderness.
In it. Without any, there still was not a hope of like, there's light at the end of the tunnel. See, look, we're almost out, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Was that surprising? Like, was there any part of this like, oh, I didn't know I could experience this inside of such a like depressing and
oh, totally
terrible place?
I mean, I would have, I mean, like 15, 20 years ago when I was in the middle of ministry, if someone would have said, hey, you know, there's going to come a point where you're going to be very tempted to give up on God, I would have said, like Peter, I would have said, no way, yeah. mm-hmm. never. Why would I ever, yeah. ever? God is good. He's always good. Well, it's easy to say that when things are good, that he's good. It's very hard to say that when everything has fallen apart.
Mm. Right.
And has not gone to plan.
Right.
And your dream is dead. I mean, dead and rotten and decaying.
Mm.
And so that's when like you come to acceptance. That's the acceptance. That final part of the stages of grief, like I realize that this is dead and I can't do it. I don't have control. And you know, so for me, you know, my new goal in life was to allow Jesus to be the shepherd every day, one day at a time. That's late 2021. That's when my goal at that point was, I am not going to try to be the initiator. I am not going to try to figure out how to get out of this thing. I'm not going to try to figure out what's next. Right. I'm just going to abide.
Yeah.
Every day I'm going to abide. I'm going to hang in there with my relationship with God through Jesus. I'm going to allow him to be the shepherd, to lead me, to help me navigate this time of my life, a very, very long, long time of my life, an exhausting time of my life, mentally challenging. And
because it was almost 10 years.
It's over 15.
Oh,
but from your last ministry thing.
From my last ministry thing in 12. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that section. But, you know, I mean, from leaving Indianapolis in 04, and, you know, I just never would imagine that, you know, I was going to be on a 20-year journey. And, you know, yes, being in a church here and there, but, you know, they never lasted. They lasted a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And they really weren't, that wasn't the point. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like, see, I got you. I'm going to put you back in ministry. Yeah. No, it was the opposite. It was like a tease almost. It's like, I'm going to put you back in ministry to teach you about what ministry really is. And ministry really is just this relationship. Mm-hmm. It's not contingent on all the things that you might do for me or with me.
Right.
It's contingent on, do you trust me every day? I mean, as your all in all, as everything, as the shepherd, you know. I mean, I can remember like one of the biggest lessons that I learned, and I felt like I had egg on my face when I learned it, was that, you know, we always think of like biblically, the man is supposed to be, is the head of the house, right? Jesus is the head of the church, but the man is the head of the house, and the man's supposed to be the provider. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is like, who told you that? I'm the provider. Mm-hmm. I will provide for your family. You as the head are supposed to be the guy that says, hey, remember.
He's the provider.
He'll provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's your role. Mm-hmm. That's your role. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. And that, so late 2021, and even though I'd already gone through all this crazy, horrible stuff in 20, you know, without money and being late and stuff like that. And even though I've had several of, you know, George Mueller experiences, I'm ashamed to even say that, like, I still was not like fully trusting.
Yeah.
So at 2021, I finally just was like, I'm done. I am not going to go. There's no fruit in me trying to go and figure it out. I already tried that. It led nowhere.
Yeah.
I am going to just simply abide. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to do. And so all of 2022, you know, God provided. He really did. He provided with, you know, stuff. Somehow we financially made it. And we're still doing podcasts and stuff like that. And still had the book out. We were meeting quite a bit. Which all those things really was still like, that to me was the light at the end of the tunnel of God's of this like-minded people and knowing that it's coming. Brown cow is dying. It's dead. It's fading away. All that other stuff is fading away. My past is fading away, but this is coming alive.
Something.
And so then obviously, you know, when we're just kind of talking and, you know, a year from a year from like this month.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. In June of 23 is when, you know, you started saying, hey, go check out this video. And we started going, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not really at the point of a birth of a dream at this point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, well, in 23, I wasn't, and I still don't think it's I don't even know if there will be a start point for that. That's hard to even like really narrow down. Yeah. But you know, but the whole death of a dream part is incredibly painful and super, super hard. Especially if it's a long suffering kind of situation where you feel like you're in the wilderness for you know, decades. Right. Versus like some people are on the, in the wilderness for maybe a couple months. Not saying that they won't experience a decade long wilderness. They could very well. Maybe, shoot, they may experience 20, you know, 3 month wildernesses. I don't know. But all I know is this, is that the type of relationship that Jesus really promotes, and we can say preaches, his message really, his message in his ministry, is that God is love, and that his love is seeking out partnership, as we've said. And that is what I feel like I learned in the wilderness, and what I feel like I learned in the death of a dream. Is, and it makes sense on paper. Of course, that's what you should. If you go from one dream to the next, you probably should, but you don't really know that when you're living it.
Yeah.
And when it's a long time. But definitely for me, I have been able to like talk to a lot of different people about this as well. And help. Now I'm in a position where I can like help people hang in there, you know, because really that's really what it's about. Mm-hmm. Just hang in there one day at a time. You know, we joked about, you know, 30 minute blocks at a time. I was at a point where like I could only handle 30 minutes because my brain wants to keep jumping forward. But abiding in Jesus is honestly, that is what we're called to. That is actually the calling. And I had to learn that, you know, the hard way. Because there's a lot of, as Chris, you said earlier, you know, like those kind of churchy words and terminology and ideas, like calling means
romanticize it. And
it's officially looks like ministry. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. That's just not true. The calling is, you know, to abide, is to be a father and son, mm-hmm. you know, a father and daughter. It's to have that relationship and work through that relationship every day and become intimate. And I always think of like, you know, and we talked about this before too, like the idea of it being a marriage. You know, you don't have a deep marriage in a year. Mm-hmm. You just don't. Mm-hmm. You don't have a deep mm-hmm. marriage in 2 years. You have to go through some stuff mm-hmm. and whatever. And really that is like, that is it. And as Darren and I used to say all the time, this is what Christianity looks like.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, mm-hmm. true Christianity really looks like this. And not patting ourselves on the back, like going, hey, check us out. This is what it is. No, because it sucks. Right. It's not fun.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to figure out like, what is Christianity? What is it all about? This is it. And, there is a joy to be found in it for sure. But that's not to say that there are, you know, those five stages of grief are they should be real. Mm-hmm. You should go through those things in order to really get with God, with God.
From the whole Rheology team, we hope these podcasts are encouraging and educational. Rheology exists for three main reasons: to reach, train, and equip those who want to go deeper with God in this partnership called Ecclesia. If God has been stirring in your heart, where you are wondering if there's more than what you've been experiencing in today's 21st century Christianity, we'd love to connect with you, to hear your story and help you know that you are not alone. You can simply contact us via the website, rheologylife.com, or reach out via Instagram at rheology_life. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.